Well, we know that most cases of anaphylaxis are seen either in the primary care setting or in the emergency room. But when is it time to send a patient to see a specialist?
I believe that any patient who has experienced anaphylaxis, even a mild episode, needs to be referred to an allergist for a couple of reasons. First of all, the allergist can help confirm the diagnosis. The allergist can often pinpoint the exact allergen through testing. And some patients will need immunotherapy. For instance, people with bee stings will benefit from immunotherapy. So I believe as the internist, even though I have my role in educating a patient, prescribing the auto-injector, giving them an action plan, the allergist has an important role.
I think it's the same thing can be said in the emergency department. When you are planning for disposition of a patient, you need to do all the things that we already talked about. After that observation period, after prescription for auto-injectors, one thing that should be on the top of your mind is a referral to a specialist to confirm the diagnosis, to do further education and further management. And like he said, in some cases, immunotherapy can be highly successful.
And today it's really an honor to be able to sit with my colleagues who we all see these patients from a different perspective. I'm an allergist. Dr. Perot is able to see them at very frequently their worst moment, which is that initial point of contact of having the reaction at that very moment in time. And then the follow-up with Dr. Simons. And I'm a firm believer that I'm a resource. I'm a resource as an allergist, and I'm happy to see the patient, but the true follow-up is going to occur through the primary care physician. And that is so important, not only for the long-term management, but we really never want to take over patients, and I think that's an important message today. As an allergist and as a specialist, we want to work with you, and we want to work with you to educate the patient.
Well, anaphylaxis shouldn't be thought of only as an acute situation. It's a risk that some people carry for life. So these patients need a long-term action plan. We met David, an avid outdoorsman, who only recently learned, at age 60, that he's allergic to yellow jackets. And although David was treated in time and prescribed an auto-injector immediately following his first episode, finding a way to manage his condition over the long haul proved to be more of a challenge.
My favorite things to do in my free time are to get outside. Hiking is the best. Yeah, I just like the exercise part of it, the beauty of it. The solitude is nice, and there's a certain spirituality for me about being out here that's really kind of renewing.
If I weren't able to go outside, life would not be nearly as enjoyable. You know, I've never had any allergies. And so when I was stung and would later find out that it was an allergic reaction, I was very surprised by that. The day I got stung was just a typical day for me. I was out doing something I've done many times before, which was mowing the lawn. Suddenly, I felt this pain and knew it was a sting. But by the time I got in the house, I was starting to feel differently than a normal sting. I realized this something was going on, and the way I felt was a little bit dizzy and just a general bad feeling kind of thing.
And I could tell right away there was something wrong. I was scared because I could tell by his color and his behavior that this was not a normal type reaction.
My wife drove, and we went to a walk-in medical clinic. It's only a few minutes away, fortunately. They concluded that I was having a reaction to the sting. They told me this was anaphylactic shock, the early stages of it, and they told me what could happen if it weren't treated, which is that it could kill me. Gave me a shot of epinephrine, and I did start feeling better within a reasonable amount of time. But they didn't tell me anything about seeking additional treatment, and I didn't know that that was even possible. I just thought, this is something you had to live with, and you hopefully you don't get stung. So I thought, this is really an awful situation I'm dealing with. I'm very concerned about this, and yet I'm not willing to give up my outdoor activities. So with that idea, I contacted and made an appointment with Dr. Blair, the allergist, and sought treatment.
Hi, David. How are you?
Good, Dr. Blair.
How have things been the last year?
Things have been good. I had a good year, no stinging. Fantastic.
Fairly quickly, we were able to get him on immunotherapy against his stinging insects.
She said what could be done for you is we actually give you yellow jacket venom, and we do it very gradually and build up your own body's resistance to the sting.
We are reducing his chances of having an anaphylactic episode again. He's not going to give up hiking, so at least we're making him safer with the immunotherapy. So the major elements of David's long-term care plan were to have an auto-injector with him, especially on his hikes.
And you want to try to avoid injecting a finger. Yeah. So some people hold it in their fist like this.
Since I can't guarantee him that he'll never have anaphylaxis again if he were to be stung, he needed to have a regimen that could help him survive any future sting.
Did you have a good time? We felt great knowing that we finally had a plan.
Good girl.
And so I don't have to worry, and I'm a worrier. So he can go out and do his thing with one less worry.
This is so much fun.
Anytime I hike or go out for any distance, I always carry with me an auto injector. I carry with me the two types of pills that will help me with the hives and the itching and so forth. I don't want to get stung, of course, and I will try to avoid getting stung. But if I do get stung by yellow jacket, I feel confident that I can deal with it.
Dr. Hernandez, your thoughts?
I like the fact that David is confident. He has a disease, anaphylaxis, and he knows what can happen, and he's prepared to handle that. And clearly, he has his medications, and he's prepared for it. So I like the fact that he's confident. He continues to live the lifestyle that he likes, which is including hiking, but he is prepared for anything that may happen along the way.
Exactly. He has taken control of his disease and has not let anaphylaxis control his life, and that's our goal for our patients.
And he understands even the difference between what the antihistamines are used for, just for the itching and the rash, and he knows that the epinephrine is what he needs. It's going to save him in the case he does have a severe reaction.
Mm-hmm. Now let's talk about some of the elements of a good long-term treatment plan. A good long-term action plan is probably a better way to put it.
First of all, we need to make it simple and straightforward. We need to remind patients, that anaphylaxis can be life-threatening and it's unpredictable. And we need to educate patients about the symptoms. And most importantly, we need to tell patients when they should use the auto injector. And we should tell patients if they were exposed to an allergen and they have shortness of breath, scratchy throat, start to have swollen lips, have generalized hives, or feel lightheaded, they should use the injector. Or if they're in a remote area and have minimal symptoms, they should use the injector because it may take too long to get back to where they need to go for definitive treatment.
And for children, going back to the criteria that were developed and remembering the two-system rule, not only, again, you can't wait until the hypotension occurs. So if the patient has skin symptoms and then they start with profuse vomiting, certainly that is a red flag, that is anaphylaxis, and it should be treated with epinephrine. And if there's a known allergen, clearly, and they have had the unfortunate accidental ingestion and they start with even one symptom, that is a very good moment to give the epinephrine before things progress and get worse.
I think it's definitely important to make sure that they carry it with them at all times. This isn't something that they can put in the glove compartment and leave. They need to have it on their person at all times, at school, at work, when they're out socializing. I think that's very important to emphasize to patients. And then we need to teach them how to use it. It's clear that physicians don't know how to use an auto injector. Subsequently, patients don't know how to use an auto injector. And there's a study of 100 pediatricians, both attending pediatricians as well as resident pediatricians, where they were asked to demonstrate the steps to use an auto injector. Only 2% demonstrated all of the steps correctly. 16% would have injected into their thumb because they had it backwards. You know, and injuries to the hand and digits are one of the most common problems that we see with auto injectors, and obviously it's not going to be effective in that manner. And also in the study was interesting that in 37% of the cases, so 37 of the 100 physicians, the way they described to use it, the patient would not have received any epinephrine at all. So it's very important that we as physicians learn how to use the auto injector, and then we can transmit that information to the patients. And I don't know, Dr. Hernandez, how do you teach your patients to use it?
There's actually a number of resources. So the American Academy of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology has an anaphylaxis action plan. And on that plan is the patient's name, triggers, whether or not they have asthma, which could put them at risk of greater risk of having anaphylaxis, different symptoms to remind the patient what exactly may occur. And then it talks about epinephrine, the fact that you shouldn't rely on your antihistamines, that will not be life-saving, and then having emergency contacts. So that is one excellent resource. Another resource is a mnemonic that was created by the American College of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology. It's known as SAFE, S-A-F-E, which is easy to use. So S for seeking support. Number one, realizing that anaphylaxis is a life-threatening condition, and then teaching those surrounding the patient about anaphylaxis and the fact that if they have a reaction, it immediately they need to be treated with epinephrine. Number two is allergen identification, so identifying those triggers and avoiding them if at all possible. Number three, the F is for follow-up, so it's follow-up with everyone that's involved in the patient's care, whether it's primary care physician and obviously the allergist who will help ensure that they have prescriptions once the auto-injector expires. We never want that to occur, so frequent follow-up. And then E is for epinephrine, which is the mainstay of therapy. One thing that I like to go through, and I agree with Dr. Perraud, the fact that physicians may not feel comfortable with how to use it or have never used it, I always review with the patient, putting that epinephrine auto-injector in our fist, as we saw in the case of David, fisting it, taking the cap out, and immediately applying it to the anterolateral thigh, holding it for a good 10 seconds with some pressure, and then calling 911 or the emergency medical services immediately.
How do you assess risk in patients who have never had an anaphylactic reaction?
There are risk factors. Certainly having asthma will have pose an increased risk for anaphylaxis. There are certain food allergens, for example, that we know you have a greater risk. So shellfish and nuts or tree nuts, peanuts, for example, may also pose a greater risk. There are also populations of patients, so teenagers that may be non-compliant and think, well, I have this nut allergy, but I'm just going to have it because nothing will happen to me. So there are certain populations that we know are at greater risk, and certainly we need to keep an eye on them. Older patients who may not see as well or be able to hear as well and may have accidental ingestion of food, certainly those are also risk factors.
There may also be some medications that patients are on that we've alluded to earlier, but that may make it difficult to find these symptoms, which then may lead to delay in treatment. So, for instance, if a patient's on a beta blocker, if they're on some kind of sedative, some kind of antipsychotic, hypnotic-type medications, they may not recognize the symptoms earlier. That's going to put them at a higher risk for fatal anaphylaxis. So we need to keep all those things in mind, alcohol, recreational drug use. There's just so many variables that can delay the recognition of symptoms in patients in the community, and that puts them at higher risk.
Can a person's level of risk be controlled or even lowered?
Absolutely. So once we know, if the patient has food allergy, for example, avoidance of a particular trigger, having an alert bracelet that says exactly what they're allergic to, if something happens, they eat something and they pass out, it's good to have that alert bracelet so that they can see that. Obviously, for insect or Hymenoptera allergy, having desensitization, which we know is up to 98% effective in patients, and again, avoidance, knowing to try to avoid areas where they may be predisposed. For example, fire ants, not going into an area where there may be fire ant mounds. So drug allergy, again, it would be avoidance of that particular that particular medication. And then the most important thing in all of these would be to remember to have the epinephrine, so that even if we lower the risk, accidental things will happen. That is unfortunately something that will happen. But if we're prepared to treat that symptom or the beginning of a reaction, that is the key point.
We've had a very rich discussion today. Thank you all for participating. Before we let you go, however, want to tease out one or two key teaching points that you'd like for your colleagues to remember after having seen this show. Dr. Simons?
Well, the point that I'd like to make is that anaphylaxis can be very subtle, and you don't always have to have hives or hypotension. So it's very important that we as physicians learn the criteria well that were presented at the beginning of the program and not wait for hypotension to make the diagnosis.
Dr. Parad?
And we've learned that epinephrine is the mainstay of therapy. It's often underutilized and it's often not used correctly, both in the emergency department setting as well as outpatient with the use of auto-injectors. And so we need to be able to use it appropriately in the emergency department with an intramuscular injection followed by IV as necessary, and then a prescription of an auto-injector as part of a disposition plan.
Dr. Hernandez.
Remembering that anaphylaxis is a life-threatening condition, but being prepared, having that long-term action plan will allow the patients to live a truly normal life. And obviously it would be perfect if every patient could see an allergist, but if not, having the primary care physician who can always contact us as a resource, and then having resources available, www.aaaai.org. There are many resources, not only for patients, but also for physicians. The Anaphylaxis Action Plan is available, Anaphylaxis Wallet Card. There's different teaching tools so that all of us can feel comfortable and know that we're providing the best care for our patients.
Doctors, thank you for your participation in this important program. And we'd also like to thank our viewers. We hope today's program has helped you to better understand how to recognize, treat, and manage anaphylaxis. We encourage each of you to go to your computer, log on to DiscoveryChannelCME.com, and take the post test. It only takes a few minutes to earn free credit for this program. And if you'd like to see it again, you can watch it online, download a podcast, or order a DVD. All the graphics and references from this program are also available online, and we've also included some resources for your patients. Finally, I'd like to thank the University of Virginia School of Medicine for accrediting the program, and I'd like to thank Day Pharma and Sanofi Aventis for the educational grants that made this program possible. I'm Rhea Blakey for Discovery Channel CME. Have a great day.